real estate allows you to be better at everything else you want to do in life. And especially for surgeons, there's a lot of negativity right now in medicine about a lot of negative secular trends in medicine with, you know, declining reimbursements, increased expenses, and corporatization of medicine, and suits getting in medicine, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you don't need your medicine income because you've got passive income to cover your monthly expenses, all of those things become less painful for you. You become a better clinician, better surgeon, better doctor, which I think is better for the community.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Vasu Kakarlapudi is an experienced ear, nose, and throat surgeon who applies his meticulous surgical precision to his real estate entrepreneurial endeavors. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you, Sam.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah. So, Sam, I grew up in Kansas City, son of Indian immigrant parents. And like a lot of other young boys at that time, in the mid-80s, the Kansas City Royals were big. So I wanted to be a professional baseball player. I tried out for the high school team and quickly realized my talent wasn't going to support my dream. So I had to switch to textbooks. And like a lot of other good Indian kids who did good in school, went into medicine and got into a combined program, six-year program at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. There, I really kind of fell in love with the meticulous nature of head, neck, ear, nose, and throat surgery. Went to residency at the University of Maryland. And so subsequently, my wife and I started our careers together in Louisville, Kentucky, in the greater southern Indiana, New Albany, Indiana, suburb of Louisville, Kentucky. And we quickly realized, my wife's a dentist, and we quickly realized that although we had a lot of income, we didn't have a lot of freedom. And so looked around to kind of see who were the guys that were actually happy in medicine and who were practicing medicine for the fun of medicine. And most of them had passive income, and a lot of them received that passive income from real estate. So being the curious guy that I am, I investigated and found people who were doing real estate and figured out kind of how they did things and figured out how I could apply those principles to my own real estate investing career. So fast forward, I'm now 47 and practice medicine on my own terms due to the financial freedom that real estate has afforded. And so through various real estate endeavors over the period of time, I've had friends and family that have joined us. And now I help other colleagues across the country get involved in real estate as well.
Right. And that's such a big void to fill is in the, you know, high income earning professional space. It's amazing how few have that understanding of passive income. I mean, I hear on this show all the time, just like, oh yeah, that was a thought that came to us, you know, 10 years out of school. And like, wait, we got to figure out another way to do this because we're burning out here. The two things you mentioned there that you saw in the colleagues that you looked up to or that were maybe ahead of you in their real estate investing journey was they had income and freedom. It takes a lot of dry powder to develop a meaningful cash flow stream would be my assumption or analysis, a meaningful income off of passive real estate investing. Can you walk us through the journey for you, maybe where, because I mean, we get two things in this business, right? We get income and then we also get the appreciation play. What's been kind of your strategy on that front for handling the income side of that?
Well, I mean, the first thing is you have to have income. And so fortunately, as physicians, we're blessed with a relatively high income. And so then the question is, how do you deploy that in a meaningful way? A lot of your listeners probably know real estate's really a way to grow wealth slowly. But it's kind of like, Jim Collins, I like to read, and I'm sure a lot of your readers have probably read a lot of Jim Collins' works. And he talks about the flywheel, and it takes some momentum for you to start building the flywheel. But after a period of time, once that flywheel starts going, it's hard to stop. If you leverage your income initially and then continue to scale that and let your appreciation, you mentioned appreciation, let your appreciation generate even more income for you. It's a time where, you know, you're essentially your passive income can exceed your monthly expenses. And therefore, that's kind of our definition of freedom is, you know, passive income greater than your monthly expenses. So it doesn't happen overnight, like most good things in life. But if persistence and patience and humility and always wanting to learn, it's kind of a surefire path to get to financial freedom.
Right. Yeah. I like the idea that this is a get rich slowly game, because it certainly is. And there are some big licks that you can get along the way, but it's certainly not the ones that produce that predictability inside the space that I think so many of us are looking for. How have you scaled your business? You're still a full-time ENT or a part-time ENT. I don't know how that quite works out in your field, but how have you scaled those two at the same time?
Yeah, fortunately, we're in a big group. So I've got, you know, 14 partners that help me leverage my time a little bit better so I can spend more time on some real estate endeavors. It's really a matter of just prioritization. And, you know, you can do a lot of things if you really just prioritize your time. So it's, you know, as physicians, we're used to working long, hard hours, and it's part of the training. It's part of the process to get to be ear, nose, and throat surgeon. So really, it's just a matter of, you know, when you have block time for being a physician, you're a physician. And when you have block time for doing real estate, you do real estate, and you don't intermix. And so, like, today is a real estate day for me. So I'm working from home and working on real estate, and I don't have any clinical responsibilities. Yesterday, I was a physician. I didn't have any real estate responsibilities. So it's really about blocking time.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a great, I mean, that's something we all struggle with, is where to focus. But, you know, being able to do one, the next certainly is key. What's it been like? You know, you started off as a passive investor. Is that right?
Well, I actually started off as an active investor and in single family, like most people, 17 years ago. And quickly realized that I couldn't scale that way and had a lot of, you know, toilets and termites and 2 a.m. phone calls, and realized that I could scale a lot easier with commercial real estate. You know, I was fortunate enough to have some significant amount of mentors that helped me. And I, you know, basically followed them, get my real life PhD in how they vet deals, how they finance deals, how they put deals together, and the entire sales cycle, and how they optimize and liquidate those deals.
So you worked alongside mentors that were bringing deals to the table. And they said, hey, you know, help us take this down. You know, you guys can kind of do the co-GP model. And then you went out and said, hey, I'm going to do this on your own. This is not a game. I'm called a game. This is not an industry where it's easy to break into, I don't think. I mean, it's something where, especially if you're doing large multifamily projects or whatever asset class, which we'll ask that next, but that you guys are into. I mean, it takes time to build team, to build momentum, to find the right assets, to underwrite them, to kind of get all those skill sets. How did you do that?
One step at a time. The way you climb a mountain is one step at a time, right? I made it a mission to just get better every day, and knowing that it would take time. So, you know, I've been at this for, again, 17 years. So This didn't happen overnight. You know, the first thing I did was I read, listened to podcasts, and found mentors and followed them on deals. I, you know, did a lot of work before I dipped my toes into the real estate world, because I think the surgeons, you know, we're pretty risk averse. We're used to following a pattern. That's the way we were trained, is we go from one landmark to another landmark. And you do that in a very methodical, risk averse way to protect our patients. You know, you were mentioning just before that, if you don't mind me saying, that you just had sinus surgery, and that's what I do. And sinus surgery is very, very delicate. It's, you know, you're right in between the brain, the eye, the smell centers. You got a lot of very important structures. So if you're not methodical about how you do things, you can get yourself in trouble really quick. And the same thing goes with real estate investing. If you're not very methodical and scientific about how you approach things. So this is not a place where you listen to a podcast from Sam, and then the next thing you know, you go take down a multifamily unit complex. It just doesn't happen that way. So slow and methodical, one step at a time, and just have goals, 30-day goals, and make 2-millimeter shifts in your mindset. And take action, but take action in a guarded way where you can, you know, work with a team of people who have done what you have done. And if you're humble and curious, and a lot of times those folks want to help you. And that's certainly the case in my situation, where mentors wanted to help me. And so I took advantage of that and really, you know, was humble and curious and learned along the way, and was able to finally take some action one step at a time.
What does finding opportunity look like for you today?
Well, finding opportunity is really building a team. You mentioned plenty of times in your podcast about, you know, real estate's a team sport. And I couldn't agree with that more. So on our team, you know, it's not just me, because I knew that if I was, again, I really kind of just started off with trying to invest my own capital, and friends and family wanted to invest along with us because we've had success. And so in order for me to really kind of continue to raise capital for my friends and family's investments, I knew I had to build a world-class team. So we have a team of, you know, world-class underwriters, you know, property manager, asset managers, and acquisitions folks and disposition folks that really help us do this in the most effective way. So we get domain experts in each of the areas of the real estate cycle.
Now, each of these individual kind of seats on the bus, are they all specific to your team, or is it this kind of shifting team framework that we kind of see in some of these deals where it's like, okay, hey, I'm going to work with Vasu on this, and then the next time you might see that same person work with somebody else on another deal? Or is it, hey, this is all your guys' in-house team?
No, I'm teamed up with one group. We are co-GPs. So our entity is called Apta Properties. And Apta Properties is teamed with 37th Parallel Properties out of Richmond, Virginia. They're an established shop that's been friends and business partners of mine for many, many years. And, you know, combined, we've done over $800 million worth of acquisitions that's been successful in the 08, 07 crisis, the European debt crisis, COVID pandemic. So we've got a very seasoned, established team that has, you know, we follow very, very, very conservative. I know it's used a lot, but conservative underwriting that has stood various economic cycles and still been profitable.
Yeah, if you've made it through 08, you know, with your shirt still on, and, you know, you mentioned a few other calamities that we've endured. If you've made it through those cycles and you came out still smelling good, then yeah, you've seen some things. You've certainly seen some things. I guess on that front, you know, there's a question that I'm commonly asking right now. What are you guys doing right now to prepare yourself for whatever it is that could be coming next? A correction, a downturn, a bull market, whatever it is you guys see, what are you doing to prepare for the future?
So I think it really comes down to studying demographics. So we're trained as surgeons to be very, very scientific, and you practice, you know, evidence-based medicine is a buzzword that's used a lot. And so in the real estate world, it's really studying demographic trends, because demographic trends are long-term trends, as you know, Sam. And so we know kind of, you know, where people are moving in the next 25, 30 years, you know, what age group, what their household income might look like, what their psychographic preferences might look like. And so we can study, you know, on large scale metropolitan statistical areas that are poised for growth. And we break that down to submarkets. And so on, before you even actually look at a deal, we spend a lot of time as demographers kind of looking at where we want to go before we actually look at the deal, because we certainly don't want to get observation bias into a deal and fall in love with a deal in a bad submarket and a bad MSA, and then get caught with our pants down. So it starts with that. And then, you know, we dive down deeper into the submarket, the asset specific location. And then in terms of underwriting, you know, we're relatively very low leverage. So I think one of the things that a lot of people are doing right now is they're banking on, you know, 10, 15, 20% rent growth, and they're baking that into their underwriting, and we're not. They're over-levering themselves. The interest rates are low. And so, you know, you're going to 80% loan to value, and they're getting some supplementals on top of that. We're in the 60s, in the high 50s or 60s. So that does sacrifice our yield a little bit. But we want to be the players that are going to be, as Ken McElroy says, when the tide recedes, you'll get to see who's naked. And we want to have our shorts on when the tide recedes. So our underwriting, our assumptions, our conservative leverage, and picking the right markets. So I think if you had to pick three things, those are the three things that we really try to excel at.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of deleveraging. I mean, leverage is a beautiful thing, but it cuts both ways. I mean, it really does. And that's something that, yeah, it's exciting when I hear people saying things such as, hey, you know what? We're going to take some risk off the table. We're pulling back leverage, and your yield's going to take a hit because of it. Sorry, but it's just what we're doing. And this is the way we see the path moving forward. How do you guys, but the key question here is, how do you guys deleverage and yet still remain competitive on the buy side?
Yeah. So I think a lot of that becomes, you know, who's the biggest player, who's the biggest investor in a deal? It's the lender. And so we have very good relationships with lenders that we're able to get money for debt for exceedingly low rates, almost in obscene rates. With inflation the way it is, it's almost feel guilty getting, you know, 60% loan to value on the kind of rates that we're getting. We're buying rate caps to insulate ourselves as well. So it all comes down to the team. So, you know, the lenders are shop as being very, very low risk. And so they're pricing their lending equivalent to the risk profile. And so we're able to, you know, pay that forward to our investor group, of which I should add, though, that every investment that we raise capital for, I'm the largest investor in there. Their dollars are invested with my dollars and are my partner's dollars, and our dollars are treated no differently. So we've got so much skin in the game beyond just our reputation. We have financial skin in the game as well. So to answer your question, how you are able to still get yield is a lot of it is based upon your reputation. And we're, you know, acquiring assets in the, you know, $50 to $80 million range. So there's a little bit less competition in that space. And the lending is better and the risk is lower because you've got better economies of scale. You get the, you know, the high quality property managers. And so we are still able to get, you know, reasonable yield and still get overall double digit returns, even if rent growth stabilizes to historical norms. And if they continue at the way they've been done right now, we'll do better, but we're still going to make money even if we have a major recession.
The key there that you, just to reiterate it, is that you're able to get far more favorable terms from your lender just because they say, oh, wait, you're only putting 60%, you know, LTV on this. You know, we're going to give you a great, great term sheet on this because it's a risk, a very risk, not risk-free, but a risk-reduced play for them.
Yeah, you see a lot of bridge debt now with CapEx and so forth. And we raise all the CapEx on the front end. So, you know, I mentioned our loan to value is 60%. Our loan to cost is in the 50s because, you know, yes, we're sacrificing yield, but our primary goal is capital preservation. If you follow the science, the greatest athletes in the world aren't necessarily the ones who played the best, but the ones who made the least amount of mistakes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to make the least amount of mistakes.
That I like that. I hadn't heard that before, but that's certainly true. I play a sport every Monday night with a group of guys, and the only thing always run through my head is all I got to do is not screw up, right? And then let the other guys make the mistakes, and we'll win by default. So that's funny. Certainly that you say that. What's it been like? What's been the journey like for you in bringing other doctors and other high income earners along for the journey? Has it been kind of rewarding in the sense that it's like you just see the light bulb come on for them?
I can't tell you how rewarding it's been. So, you know, everything I've done, I beta tested on myself before I brought this out to the rest of the world and my friends and family. So as I've found financial freedom, you know, I have devoted more time to my family. I've devoted more time to my interests. I've devoted more time to charity. I get to do the things that I want to do because of the power that real estate, the fruits of real estate. And so I feel like I'm a much better physician now than I ever was before because I'm not playing the volume game. I'm not under any pressure because I don't need the paycheck for my day job as a doctor. I found that I'm much more empathetic and caring to patients, which, as you know, as a patient yourself, that's as important as the science. I always had the science, but now I'm learning some of the softer sides of how to really connect with patients. And so that's the power that real estate has done for me. I've been able to, you know, spend time with family, more time with my kids. We've got a 13-year-old, a 10-year-old, and right now they still like mom and dad and want to take advantage of that as much as we can, and have been able to, you know, support the charitable causes of, you know, everyone's got their own charitable cause. And for us, it's underprivileged kids that don't get a fair shake in life. And so we've been able to use a lot of the real estate earnings and practice earnings to divert that into causes that we like too. So the long story short, real estate allows you to be better at everything else you want to do in life. And especially for surgeons, there's a lot of negativity right now in medicine about a lot of negative secular trends in medicine with, you know, declining reimbursements, increased expenses, and corporatization of medicine, suits getting in medicine, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you don't need your medicine income because you've got passive income to cover your monthly expenses, all of those things become less painful for you. You become a better clinician, better surgeon, better doctor, which I think is better for the community. You as a patient, you know, would probably want your doctor who wants to work on you because of their passion for their craft, as opposed to having to pay their kids private school tuition, you know?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I hadn't quite ever thought about that. But no, you're right. If I had to pick, I'd pick the physician that's in your shoes, not the guy that has to hustle it out, you know, getting patients through as fast as he can in order to meet his income requirements. So that's absolutely fascinating. Vasu, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thanks for taking the time to break down your business, the things that you've learned along the way, what real estate has done for you, and of course, how you are helping other physicians really learn and follow in your footsteps. I think it's absolutely cool, and also love certainly the way that you have chosen to give back. I think that's absolutely fantastic. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you and what you do, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, it's been my pleasure, Sam. Our entity is called Apta Properties. We're on the web, and my LinkedIn profile is just Vasu Karkalapudi, MD, on LinkedIn.
Awesome. We'll be sure to put those links in the show notes. Vasu, thank you again. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.